Thank you, Liz. My name is Bonnie. I am an alcoholic. Thank you. When you say hi, Bonnie, I know you love me. And not only do I need that, but with God's grace to me, I accept that. When I brought my friend, because I drive a pickup truck, she rides shotgun with me. She's 6 foot. I want to ask this gal to stand up because I want you to take a look at her. I want to share some things with you about this gal. Stand up, Norm. She's 6 foot and I'm 5 foot two. Now you know why she rides shotgun and I do the driving. When we came into the motel yesterday, we had a gentleman step outside and grab our luggage and escort us over to the desk, and they said, yeah, we know you're here. We've been looking for you. They carried us up to our room, and there was this great big bowl of fruit up there. Are you believing this? A big bowl of fruit. I said, what's going on here, Norma? She said, just accept it. I came down to the registration desk, and I walked up, and I looked at a lady I'd never seen in my life before, and I said, I'm Bonnie from Pensacola. Oh, yeah, we've been expecting you. Here's a posy for your dress. I looked at Norma, and I said, what's going on? She said, just accept it. Then I met Liz. Now, folks, I'm here before you this morning, and most of you are strangers to me, in appearance only. But I instantly made a friend, and I know all of you are friends. I feel right at home. Those of you in Mississippi truly know what the meaning of Southern hospitality is. The committee of your roundup has made me feel welcome, at home, comfortable, cared for, and I think they deserve something special. And now for the good stuff. I am an alcoholic. That identifies me. I did all that was necessary to get here. I don't need to tell you any more than my name is Bonnie and I'm from Pensacola and I'm an alcoholic. That's sufficient. Because it's not necessary for me to give you a drunkalogue. You're not interested in that. And I'm only interested in looking back and sharing that when it's necessary to help somebody else. What I want to share with you is what's happened to me since the fourth day of April, 1978, because that's when I really became Bonnie. Till that point in my life, I was just a reckless, hopeless, miserable, sick, empty shell that walked around in a body. I walked into a bar one night on the 3rd of April looking for my drinking buddies. It was a Monday night in Pensacola. It was raining and it was cold and I was lonely. Loneliness was no stranger to me. That was the only friend I had. I couldn't find anybody to drink with me. I went to 3 different bars and the last one I stopped was my favorite watering hole. And when I walked in that bar, some fella stood there. And he looked at the bartender and he said, Brenda, here comes that old drunk. I'll buy her the first drink and let's shut her up. I want you to know I am grateful to God Almighty because that's the first time I was confronted with who and what I was. I would like you to believe that I was the ex-governor's wife when I walked in there, and if you'd have sat beside me on the stool, I'd have told you all about her because it was the biggest lie I could think of at the time. The truth was, I was just a drunk. I am so grateful that man had the courage and that God gave him the grace to call me a drunk. I didn't want to be a drunk. You know, my counterparts in the fellowship, the gentlemen, when they get drunk and they kind of raise a little hell and they get silly and knee-walk, it's kind of funny. You know, society looks at a man drunk is almost excusable. But when a woman does it, it's pathetic. She's pitiful. And she's pitied. And oh, how I used to enjoy that. It's easy for a woman to drink. I've been out in some of the best bars and some of the worst ones without a dime in my pocket and got knee walking. It's easy for a woman to drink. I'm a product of the bars and the bedrooms in Pensacola. And that's my past. When I was confronted with what I was, I couldn't even drink all of my last drink. I took two sips on it, sitting on that bar stool in my little princess way, and I walked out of that bar on my belly, and I went home. It was early. My two little kids were at the house, and they said, "What's the matter, Mama?" I said, "Children, just leave Mother alone. She wants to go to bed." And they were used to that. They were used to being put off and put down and put aside. And I sat down on the side of my bed, and I thought about something I hadn't thought about before. I said, "Bonnie, if you're a drunk, what are you going to do? What in God's name will you do?" Some years before that, I had worked for a man as his bookkeeper and his secretary. And my desk sat right outside of his office, and he too was a drunk. I've drank with him many times. And when he would get on one of his kicks about 10 o'clock in the morning when the bourbon started to run short, he used to kick his garbage can over my head. And I had heard a couple of months before that this man had found this beautiful fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, that he was straightened out, that he was living a life that was full of joy and comfort, and he had faced some hellacious things. He'd been through a messy divorce and open heart surgery and on, but he stayed sober. And that's all I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, was that when you got here, nice things happened to you. There was no doubt in my mind that Alcoholics Anonymous had something for me. I was one of the fortunate ones when I come tumbling through your door. I had never had a DWI. I had never been through a treatment center. I had never been a detox unit. I just simply was a drunk in a bar that finally, through God's grace and courage, allowed me to pick up the phone that morning after I had slept the night and called the answering service of Alcoholics Anonymous out of a newspaper ad in Pensacola. And I told this little lady, I didn't know what was going on. You know, I just was doing my thing. I said, "You know, this is the way it is. You see, when I got up that morning and I went in my bathroom and took my shower to get ready to go to work, I had this full-length mirror on the back of the bathroom door. I weighed 120 pounds then, and I had all the typical, ordinary, everyday appearances of somebody that drank too much. I stepped out of that shower just as naked as the day I was born, and without my makeup and my hair dripping wet. I didn't know me. I scared the hell out of myself. I had the barroom pallor. I had the black wrinkles and circles under the eyes. I had the thickness and the swelling from too much drinking. And I said, "My God, who are you?" That was enough. I picked up the telephone and I called the answering service, and this lovely lady answered the phone and she said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Well, yes, you see, I got this friend that's got a problem." And she said, "Okay." I said, "Would there be any possibilities that you might send me some of written material maybe that you folks have in a brown paper wrapper?" Now, this old lady, she was slick. Let me tell you, alcoholics are slick. She said, "Well, I'd be delighted to if you'll give me your name." She had it. Had my name. And I told her. She said, "Well, now, Bonnie," she said, "you know, I need an address to mail this to." And just as slick as nothing, I gave her my address. And she said, "Well, now, Bonnie, you know, if you don't get it, I want to check back with you in a couple of days. How about giving me your home phone number and let me check back with you and make sure you receive it?" And, boy, I gave her my home phone number. And she said, "Do you work?" And I said, "Well, yes, ma'am." She said, "Well, give me your work phone number so I can reach you if I can't catch you at home." And she had it. And when she got all the information she needed, she said, "Bonnie, is your friend Bonnie?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Well, honey, don't drink anything this morning. You go on to work, and I'll check with you in a little while." And check with me she did. You know, I really didn't think that she would. I really didn't think she would. I thought she would just be nice. But about 10 o'clock, she called me, and she said, "How you feeling?" And I said, "Not very good." She said, "Listen, I know there's a grocery store right next to where you work. Are you going to take a break pretty soon?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "You go over there and buy you some M&Ms and put them in your pocket and eat them today." And I said, will that work? She said, "Sure, try it." So I got hooked on M&Ms real quick. She said, "I tell you what," she said, "what's your lunchtime?" And I told her, and she said, "Well, let me check back with you at lunch and see how you're feeling." And I said, "Thank you for calling." I said, "Well, you know, anybody calls you 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning and tells you to eat M&Ms, something a little strange, but, you know, if that's her bag, well, I was willing to put up with that." Sure enough, she called me at lunchtime, and she said, "Have you got a minute to chat?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "I'd like to do something for you that maybe would help you." And I said, "Well, I'll try." She said, "That's what I want to hear. I want to hear you try." And I thought, my God, what's this woman got me doing? She said, I'd like to come over to your apartment tonight and meet you. And I'd like you to go with me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you'd like to go." And, you know, she'd already been so nice, how could I refuse? Now, you know, she had me. And so I agreed. She said, "Well, I'll be over there about 7 o'clock, and I just really said okay. And then I got to thinking about it. What in God's name have I left myself in for? You know, it was nothing unusual for me to leave the house with some strange people. My kids were used to it, but I didn't know these guys from Jack's Alley Cat, and I wasn't sure I really wanted to do this. So she called me back at my afternoon break, and she said, "Now, I don't want you to drink anything on the way home tonight. You go on home, and you should be home about 5:30, and I'll call you." And I said, "Well, hell, I don't want her talking to my kids. I best get home." So when I got home, sure enough, the phone had already rung. And the kid said, "Ma, some old woman named June called you. She said she'd call you back in a little bit." I said, "Uh-oh." I said, "Oh, okay. You know, we're just good at things. When you drink like I drank, and you have a family and you're a single parent, you catch on. It's pretty hard to shuffle pots and pans with 3/5 of bourbon in you. So I taught my 9-year-old how to cook. I was a good alcoholic. The kid had spaghetti again, and I sat down to a spaghetti dinner, and this lovely lady called me on the phone, and she said, 'It's about 5:45, and I'll be there at 7. And I said, "Okay." I was in over my head. There was no way out. Well, I looked under the kitchen sink where I kept my bourbon, and it wasn't there. And I said, "Now, looky here. You may drink a little too much, but you don't ever lose your bottle." But I was already confused and torn and twixt and wrung out, and these guests were coming to see me. And I said, "Well, I probably just forgot where I left it." So I didn't say anything. About 6:45, my doorbell rang, and I thought, "Uh-oh, they're here. Early." Wrong. It was my landlady. She came in, and she said, "Bonnie, I just thought I'd drop by to see how you are." I said, "I'm fine." And we talked for a few minutes, and my doorbell rang again, and here they were. Now, I want to ask you something. If you're trying to keep your mouth shut about your drinking, and you got two members of Alcoholics Anonymous ringing your doorbell and your landlady's in your living room, what the hell do you think you would do? You got it. I headed towards the back door, and there stood my kids barring the door. Well, enough's enough. I thought to myself, They're going to come in here, and they're going to say, "How do you do? I'm from Alcoholics Anonymous, and we come to get one of your tenants." Boy, was I in for a surprise. This lovely lady and her husband, who became my first sponsors, came in, and they introduced themselves to my landlady, and they didn't say the first word about where they were from or who they were or what business they were on in my apartment. And I learned fast, real quick, as the recipient of a graceful, wonderful tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous called anonymity. I was protected from the very beginning, and I thank Almighty God for that. It saved my neck. I believe that God gave those people the grace and the understanding, without realizing what they were doing, that anonymity is so important. They talked to my landlady for a few minutes, and they were gracious, and I was flabbergasted. My landlady left, and this couple looked at my children, and they said, "We're going to take your mama off for a little while, but we'll be back about 9:30, 9:45. Now, you girls lock the door behind us and don't go out, and it'll be okay." My little old girls were sitting on that couch, and their eyes were as big as saucers. They had seen their mama go out before, and they had heard the promise that I would be back early many, many times. I'd give a nickel to know what they thought. But I think I know. I really think I know. They took me to my first AA meeting. There were several groups in Pensacola at that time, and they put me in the back seat of their car, and they were going down the road. And June said to her husband, Bob, she said, "You know, there's a group they call in Pensacola, off the record, the Satin Sheets group." She said, "I don't think we can take Bonnie there. I think we better take her to this other group where they, off the record, call it riffraff." Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do, and you belong where you belong now. I walked in the door of that meeting, and the first person I met was this older gentleman with this big, long, fuzzy white beard, and my God, he grabbed me. He didn't have no teeth, and he slobbered all over my face when he kissed me. Well, I had a few choice things to say to him, because it was a classic example of who I was. I was a very angry, very upset, very disorientated, very lonely, very sick person. That man has become one of my best friends. But I tell you what, if you've ever been welcomed your first meeting to an AA meeting where you're grabbed and slobbered and kissed and hugged like that, you'll never forget it. Never. And so I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous with the joy and the grace of anonymity and the bear hug of love and acceptance. I can only see that now through hindsight. I went to that group every night. Every night. And every day this lovely lady would call me, and I'd say to her, "I'm not going to work today. I don't feel like it. My hands won't type very good. IBM is letting me down. It don't spell." She'd say, "Fine, when you get to work, you call me." I said, "But you don't understand." She said, "Just call me." And she would hang up the phone. Well, about 5 minutes after my office opened, I'd get a telephone call. "Well, I see you made it. Talk to you later." Click. This went on for some weeks, and I'm grateful that it did. I understand now that the telephone has become one of Alcoholics Anonymous's best friends. I enjoy the privilege now of not only receiving those calls, but being given the grace and the ability to make some of those calls. I was sitting in a meeting about 2.5 weeks sober one night when one of the fellows in this group said something that has become very, very important to me. You know, I came out of the bar being called a drunk, and I thought that's what I was. That's all I knew to be called. This old fellow, he's kind of a crusty old cuss, and I've learned to love him. Sitting there leaning up against the wall one night, just kind of off the cuff in a meeting, and he says, you know, he said, when I got down here, I was a drunk, and when I got here long enough, stayed here long enough, I became an alcoholic. And I jumped straight up out of my chair, and I said, my God, now I know who I am, and I suddenly have come up in the world. Think about it. There's a hell of a lot of difference between being a drunk and being a recovered alcoholic. Well, I latched on to that one. I said, that's great. I'm not a drunk anymore. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Hey, let me tell you about this. This is great. I don't have to drink anymore. I really don't. I thought that was one of the most beautiful things I had ever heard. It was only a few nights later that I still felt very lonely, that I felt very bad. You see, I couldn't quite forget the image I had seen in the bathroom mirror of what I truly looked like when I didn't have my clothes on and when I didn't have my makeup on and when I wasn't pretending to be somebody I wasn't. And God in His mercy came to me again through one of you people. They always close the meeting in this group with the Lord's Prayer, and when they do that, they hold hands. That was a foreign thing to me. I didn't quite understand all this touchy stuff. This little old gal was sitting beside me in a meeting one night, and it was time to say the Lord's Prayer, and she looked up at me, because I'm short, but she was short, really short. She said, Bonnie, let me hold your hand while we pray, and I almost fell through that concrete floor. I said, God, they want to touch me, and I'm one of the untouchables. I felt the slime and the filth and the garbage of waste and deterioration and degradation. And this woman wants to hold my hand, and she wants to hold my hand to pray. Thank you. Thank you for still holding my hand. It's one of the grandest joys of contact in this fellowship. That little lady didn't know that God had come to me through her. The next time you reach out and you take a stranger's hand, thank God for it. Oh, thank God for it. That's why I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a sign on the wall of our meeting room that says, I always want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, I am responsible. I'm so glad. I'm so grateful that that little lady was obedient and loving and asked to hold my hand. My life has been filled with things like that in this fellowship. Just chock full of them. Now, I've told you just how wonderful the first couple of weeks were. And you know what happens when that pink cloud starts to crumble? It seems as though my boss and I were on the phone one morning, and we had a misunderstanding. You see, I wasn't drinking, but I was still an alcoholic, and I still had everything wrong with me that could be wrong with me. And I was giving it full show to the whole world. I was madder than hell at the world and people in particular, and I left him have it. and he found it convenient for me to spend the week off by myself without pay to think it over. Well, apparently my God, as I understand him, had some plans for me that week. And I picked up my little handbag and I got on my little old ragged out Ford and I headed to the house. And I called one of the few people I knew that I thought would understand being suspended from work. You know, that's an embarrassing place to be. What was I going to tell people? How were people going to really believe that I was what I used to tell them I was, and here I am a week off without pay? I called this man and he said, "Bonnie, where are you?" And I said, "I'm at my apartment." He said, "Well, you're about a half a mile from University Mall. I want you to go up there and sit on a bench right inside the main entrance. I'll be right there." He said, "Don't you drink a drop till I get there." I said, "No, sir, I won't." I went up to the mall and I sat on that bench and directly here he come. Now, let me tell you about that day, because it's something that's very important to me. I watched that man get out of his car, stride across that parking lot, and I didn't know what there was different about that man, but whatever he had going for him, I sure needed some up, just a little bit, just a little bit. I have never seen anybody walk with the smoothness and the grace and the dignity as I saw that man walk across that parking lot that day. I know now what that's all about. He came into the mall and he sat down beside me and he said, "Tell me about it." And I explained my difficulty to him and he said, "Well, you know, Bonnie, you've been around the fellowship about 3.5 or 4 weeks now. And maybe God has something for you to do this week with your time off." I said, "Uh-oh." I looked at him and I said, "You know, I don't mind being off the week, but I tell you what's really bothering me." And he said, "What?" You ever heard a member say, "What? Watch out. Watch out." I said, "Well, you see, for a couple of years now, in the last couple of weeks since I don't drink anymore, I got this problem with these little black slimy things." And he said, "Tell me about them." And I said, "Well, you know, when I open my closet door in the morning, they're there watching me. And when I open my pocketbook for my cigarettes, they're there watching me. And when I go out to get in my car, they slide right out of the little hole I want to put my key in. And they laugh at me and they make fun of me. And I don't understand it. I don't really think I'm crazy, but I guess I must be, because they're everywhere. They follow me everywhere. And I can't live this way. I can't stand being scared like this. I don't know what those little black three slimy things are, but, you know, something's got to be done. Maybe you ought to just go take me someplace and let them lock me up a while or something. I just can't handle it." You know, he never batted an eyelash. That spook story didn't scare him a bit. But he's a man of action, and he knew what action would do for you in this fellowship, and he said, "You come with me, girl." And I got up and he took my hand. It was the coldest, marchiest, windiest day I think Pensacola has seen in years. And God spent his time with me that day through that man and sent the wind. That man stepped outside with me on the curb of that street there at University Mall and he said, "Girl, I think it's time that you take those three little black things that are driving you so wild and you tell God to put them on this wind and you run them out of town and never bring them back to you." And I looked that man in the eye and I said, "Do you really believe God would do that?" He said, "Yes, I do. And I'll stand here with you." I looked at that bright sunshine and that big blue sky. And I said, "God, you see those three black little slimy things sitting here beside me on this street? I can't stand it. if you'll just take them and put them on your wind and blow them away. When I get a chance, I'll tell everybody I meet how much you love me this day. I haven't seen those black slimy things from that day till this, and looking back, I understand that it hasn't been necessary for me to be compulsively willing or wanting to take another drink of alcohol. You can make of that story what you please, but I found a God that had some power, and that's what they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was relieved of the burden of craving a drink in a very dramatic way. I suspect God knows me so well that that was the only way he was ever going to get through to me. I looked up at that man and I said, "I'm ready to go home now." He said, "Yeah, girl, I think you are, but you got your homework. And I'm not going to let you go home. I'm going to take you back to my office with me because I know you know how to type." And I says, "Uh-huh. This is how they're going to make you pay your dues." But I went. You know what he gave me? He gave me what I would consider an alcoholic's best friend. He gave me a paper and a pencil, and he said, "It's fourth step inventory time." Yeah. I looked at him, and I said, "What do you want me to do?" He said, "Bonnie, I want you to write the greatest American novel that's ever been written about everything that's happened to you from the day you can remember till now." And I won it all. I said, "This man's out of his mind, but I'll try." I don't understand exactly how all these steps work. I still don't. But that was my first effort. And I went back in my big book one day and I read that first four-step inventory said that I could digest some pretty big chunks about me. And that's what happened to me with that opportunity. I just had an opportunity to sit down and write some of the bigger chunks. I couldn't swallow all of me at one time. God knew what he was doing. He had some plans for me. And I started to work the program. What more can I tell you? It worked. It always works. So started the first and early stages of my recovery. It's not unusual for me to run into these kinds of circumstances again and again and again. God has come to me so many times through people just like you, and I'm so grateful. I stuck around the program. And God had another thing he wanted me to learn to do. I'd like to take an opportunity to maybe do something a little bit out of the ordinary. I hope you'll bear with me a minute. In my early days, I was a very disruptive member of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I went to meetings, if they said something I didn't agree with, I said so right then. It was not considered rude for me to just absolutely interrupt a speaker for that. They just didn't say what I thought they ought to say. I said so. One of my first meetings I went to was an AA birthday, and this lady was celebrating 4 years of sobriety, and I stood up and said, "Bullshit, nobody ever stayed sober 4 years in their life." They did the same thing. They laughed. They said, "That's all right, Bonnie, you just stick around a little while. You'll figure it out." And it made me mad. They always kept telling me to come back. Well, I was over at a meeting one night, and they were talking about this business of serenity and peace, and peace of mind, and love, and fellowship. You know, when you're as sick as I was, you can just about handle so much of that sweet stuff, and you begin to gag. And I just couldn't sit still another minute. And one of these nice ladies was talking, and one of the fellows was talking, and they were just all this serenity. I thought to myself, bullshit. And promptly said so. Now I'm going to ask Norma to stand up again. Just stand up and let them take a look at you, Norma. Point your finger at them, Norma. Now you know what I faced. This lady gets up, and she leaned across about two rows of chairs, and she put that finger about 4 inches from my nose. And she said to me, "Bonnie, shut up and listen, or I personally will give you your damn misery back in about 30 days. Now, when you're 5'2", and you got a gal 6', telling you to shut up and listen, what do you think I did? I listened. I continued to go to meetings, and let me tell you, Norma and I didn't become friends for a while. I fully intended to stay sober 30 days because I was going to piss her off and show her I could. Isn't it funny how God comes to us sometimes, not always, with gentleness, not always in meekness, and not always quietly. Sometimes he greets me with pure force. And honey, when he sent that 6-footer my way, he knew what he was doing. It took me 3.5, almost 4 years to where I'd even speak to her. Today, we're great friends. You see, she did what Alcoholics Anonymous does. She carried the message to this suffering alcoholic and told me what I didn't want to hear. I wonder, looking at this audience this morning, how many there are of you who have many times followed the same road of obedience and willingness and carried the message. Those of you who are here who can identify with that in your own hearts know it. And I thank God for you. God wasn't finished with me yet. He just isn't in the junk business. And he decided he was going to fix me up a little bit more. I'd like to have all of you Al-Anons and Alateens stand up because I want to talk to you. Come on. Have you ever noticed that God's never run out of gifts? He just never run out of gifts. He found it convenient, 6 months into my sobriety, to send me an Al-Anon. I'm grateful to God for sending that man my way and into my life. You know, he knows Bonnie. Now, this rascal's 6' and weighs 240. He came into an Al-Anon meeting one night, and I bumped into him, and guess who bounced off the wall? Wasn't him. That was my introduction to Al-Anon, by the way. I got bounced right off the wall. I met this lovely man, and through the Al-Anon program that he worked, he shared something with me that I'd like to share with you. I'm grateful to you, AA people. And I feel blessed and indeed grateful to be one of you. It was through you and your efforts of carrying the message that I was able to get sober and for this period of time in my life stay sober. I never had to go out and try. I hope I never do. It's been a long 6.5 years. But it was through the Al-Anon program, and specifically this one Al-Anon and his friends, that I got a glimpse of what living and serenity is all about. By the time I met this Al-Anon, I was dry, but I was anything but serene. You see, I never had the necessary discipline that it takes to live I mean, really live. The kind of things that you don't live from one highlight of your life to the next, but that you can live in the spaces in between. I would have told you in a heartbeat that I knew how to handle money, and did I learn something from him. He and I got married, and I moved into his home with my two teenagers and his two teenagers, and we had four teenagers, with an alcoholic that wasn't quite well yet and an Al-Anon that was going to teach me. I thought I had this thing wired. Boy, did I get some surprises. I learned from him how to balance a budget, but only after he taught me how to make one. Budgets were for other people, not me. You see, after I got dry, some of these character defects of mine started to surface in the most unusual ways. I don't know about the rest of you, but I was a spendthrift from the word go. There was no end to money. If you had checks in your checkbook, you wrote them. And when he caught on, he said, I want you to go see your banker, and I want you to level with him. I said, you go talk to him. He said, no, ma'am. You bought this one, you go do it. So I went over to the bank, and I talked to my banker, and I said, this is my problem, and this is what I'm doing. And I need to make arrangements to straighten out this mess. I didn't know that my banker friend had a brother in this program. And he said, Bonnie, I'm willing to take one chance on you. I will hold your checks till you bring me your paycheck. And when you do that, I want you to close your account, because I do not want your business in this bank anymore. Folks, I got off light because I should have gone to jail. I'm grateful. This fellowship reached through his brother to him, to me. And isn't that amazing? So I learned quick, this is a no-no. And I went home to my husband and I said, now what do I do? He said, well, why don't you try getting on your knees and saying, thank you, Lord. That was a light sentence. Now we'll get down to the business of making budgets. I was disciplined in that manner because I needed it. I hated it. I fought them. I fussed. I cussed. I threw things. I swore. I pitched a fit. I cried and I bawled. But I made that damn budget. I had another little problem that was surfacing, and one of them was a disorganized household. Now let me tell you something. Al-Anon's just put up with so much of that, and that's all. He called me out to the kitchen table one Saturday morning, and he said, I love you, Bonnie. I love you dearly. But I will not tolerate your behavior in this household, the way you do things. It's time for some changes. I know it will be difficult, but you must change. Your program and mine say, we either grow or we go, and it's growing time. I got a 15-minute lecture on how to take a bath, but it was necessary. You see, there were six of us in that family, and if I stood in the shower and used all the hot water, there wasn't anything left for anybody else, and he left me draw my own conclusions, and I figured out that that was very selfish and very self-centered, and that I really didn't know how to share. So it was necessary for me to be taught how to take a bath. Promptly. I want to share this with you. This morning, I had an opportunity to stand in a shower and not worry about running out of hot water. I told you, you folks were good at hospitality. I haven't done that in a long time. And I enjoyed it immensely. Ooh, it's squeaky clean. Love it. The next thing that we had to work on was this business of meal times. And I was told that I would post a menu. And I said, mm-mm. There ain't no way you're going to tie me down and schedule me to that. Forget that fella. He said, fine, then don't come to the table for a meal. The rest of this family will operate that way. I says, well, hell, there's a restaurant at the corner. Y'all have fun. I ain't washing the dishes when I come home. He said, fine. That lasted till Thursday before payday was Friday. I posted a menu. These may sound like very silly, very unimportant things, but they were the basis in my early sobriety to understand that discipline is a necessary part of living, and only good things can come out of discipline. That was a very difficult, bitter lesson for me to learn. I'd like to tell you that our lives progressed and that we lived in cloud cuckoo land and everything was wild and wonderful the rest of our days, and it was not so. We were married a year and I decided it was time for me to take flight. I had had enough of Al-Anon. I went to the fellowship and I complained and I bawled and I fussed, and they said, Bonnie, things come to pass, not to stay. You'll make it. You're going to be okay. You hang in there. And they just loved me right on. They left me crying, fussing, bawling, moaning, complaining. And here I was, out on my own again. Let me share this with you. God in His mercy found it right and proper for me to learn some discipline through Al-Anon. I wouldn't have made it alone. I wouldn't have been able to. You see, I found out that living sober takes a little bit of thought and consideration of others, like paying the bills so they don't turn the lights out. Like, you know, when the kids show up for supper, there's food in the refrigerator. And to this day, I still post a menu because it's a discipline for me. Doesn't do really that much for anybody, but it reminds me of God's grace to me. There were some other things that happened to me in sobriety that I'd like to share with you because they're important for what they are, not necessarily to me, but to prove and to reassure to you that this fellowship is exactly what it says it is. It's a group of men and women who share their experiences, their strengths, and their hope. In the 6.5 years that I've been sober, I've lost both of my parents. My mother died. She was cremated and buried without a funeral service because that's what she wanted. I don't think I could have could really stand the grief, except that when I shared it with the first AA member I met, one who's very precious to me, I met him in the hallway in the mall where I work, and he said, what's the matter, Bonnie? You look a little down. And I said, yeah, my dad died yesterday. And God, being who God is, came to me through that man. He made the slightest gesture that carried me through that experience. He simply tipped his hat in prayer. I'll let you draw your own conclusions. When my dad died, that was when my mother died. When my dad died, he was in Pennsylvania and they cremated him and my sisters and the rest of my family up there found it necessary to send my dad's cremains to Pensacola. It arrived at my front door by UPS in a little brown box. And I said, my God, now what do I do? One of my A buddies pulled in behind that truck that delivered my dad's cremains to me. And he took one look. And he said, Bonnie, I love you. And then I knew that I had the complete, total, committed love of this whole fellowship. And I knew that I could do what I had to do. I took the cremains from the man and I signed the ticket. I put him in my car. Went out to the Bayview Memorial Burial Gardens there in Pensacola. And one of the men went up and dug the grave. And my brother and I got down by the grave and we put the urn down in the dirt. And he said, "Do you want to say something?" And I said, "I loved him." That was enough. You see, I understood that because I had just been told, "I love you." What more could I ask that I didn't deserve? It's been times like those and times like these that we understand again how much God has been a part of our lives through each other. There's not time for me to share all the times and all the things that God has so gracefully given to me and allowed me to give to you. There is only time to tell you that I thank God for allowing me to come and share some of my life with you. And my prayer for him is that he puts in your heart that special joy, because I know how much you have shared your lives with me in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous.